namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om 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 namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, The Prayers of Queen Kunti, Text Number 24. 1:8:24. Vishan,
Vishan, Mahagne, Purushada Darshanad.
Asat
Sabhaya, Vanavasa Krishtrata,
Mride
Mride,
Aneka,
Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas,
Chasma,
Hare,
Abirakshitaha,
Vishan Mahagne, Purushada Darshana,
Vishan Mahagne, Purushada Darshana, Asat Sabhaya, Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Satsabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Satsabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Satsabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Satsabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanat,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshanat,
Satsabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Satsabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Chasma Hare
Virakshita, Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Dronyastratas Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Vishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana,
Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Asat Sabhaya Vanavasa Krishrata,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Mride Mride Neka Maharatastrato,
Dronyastratas
Chasma Hare Birakshita,
Vishat, From poison.
From poison.
Mahag Agne. From the great fire. Purusha Ada.
The
man eaters.
Darshanad.
By combating.
Asat.
Vicious.
Sabhayaha.
Assembly. Vanavasa. Exiled to the forest.
Krishtataha.
Suffering.
Mrade.
Again and again in battle.
Aneka.
Many. Maharata. Great generals.
Astrataha.
Weapons.
Droni.
The son of Dronacharya.
Astrataha.
From the weapon of. Cha.
And.
Asma. Indicating past tense.
Oh my lord.
Virakshitaha. Protected completely. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
Enjoy.
My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the vicious assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle where great generals fought. And now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. The list of dangerous encounters is submitted herein. Devaki was once put into difficulty by her envious brother. Otherwise, she was well. But Kunti Devi and her sons were put into one difficulty after another for years and years together. They are put into trouble by Duryodhan and his party due to the kingdom. And each and every time, the sons of Kunti were saved by the Lord. Once Bhima was administered poison in a cake. Once they were put into the house made of shellac and set afire. And once Draupadi was dragged out, and attempts were made to insult her by stripping her naked in the vicious assembly of the Kurus. The Lord saved Draupadi by supplying an immeasurable length of cloth, and Duryodhan's party failed to see her naked. Similarly, when they were exiled in the forest, Bhima had to fight with the man-eater demon, Dimbi Rakshasa, but the Lord saved him. So, it was not finished there. After all these tribulations, there was the great battle of Kurukshetra, and Arjuna had to meet such great generals as Drona, Bhishma, and Karna, all powerful fighters. And at last, even when everything was done away with, there was the Brahmastra released by the son of Dronacharya to kill the child within the womb of Uttara. And so the Lord saved the only surviving descendants of the Kurus, Maharaj Riksha. And now we'll chant the Mangala Charana prayer before discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which you'll find on page number 10 of your song book, of your hymn book.
The hymnal.
You'll find it on page 10 of your hymnal. In front of your pew.
Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sahagajatam Sahaganar Pranamitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Krishna Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vidamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Sri Madeva Tivedanta Swami Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaurani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Ashakya Shishavarine Namo Vishnu Paraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimade Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Dinamane Shri Varshadamanavi Devi Daitaya Kripavanaya Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Vaine Prabhaye Namaha Madhurya Vala Vrile Madhya Shri Rupanuka Bhaktina Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Gostute Namaste Gauravani Shrimurtaye Dinatarine Rupanuga Yudapa Siddhanta Tvanta Harine Namo Gaurakishoraya Sakshat Vairagya Murtaye Nirpralambar Sambode Padam Pujayate Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachinananda Namane Gaura Shakti Sarupaya Rupanuga Vrayate Gaura Virbhava Bhumasi Swam Nirdeshita Sachjana Priya Vaishna Sarva Bhoma Shri Jagannathayate Namaha Vanchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vehevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratishe Namaha Pancha Tattva Makam Krishna Bhakta Rupa Sarupakam Bhakta Maharam Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Jayatam Surato Pangor Mahamata Makirgati Matsarasa Padambo Jo Radha Madana Mohano Divya Trindaranya Kaupadamada Srimad Ratnakarasimhasanasto Srimad Shishivadovinda Devo Vristali Bisevya Manaswami Srimad Rasarasarambi Vamsi Patra Stasitaha Karshan Venu Swaner Gopir Gopinatha Sriyeshtuna Tabda Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishamanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vrindaye Tosi Devai Priyaye Kachamasincha Krishna Bhakti Devi Sachavacha Namo Namaha Jaya Jaya Nishringha Prahlada Desha Jaya Padma Mukha Padma Vrika Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Ishan Mahagne Purushada Darshana Asat Sabaya Vanavastra Kritshata Mrede Mrede Neka Maharata Strato Draunyascha Taschas Mahare Virakshidaha My dear Krishna, your lordship has protected us from a poisoned cake, from a great fire, from cannibals, from the bishop assembly, from sufferings during our exile in the forest, and from the battle with great generals fought, and now you have saved us from the weapon of Ashwatthama. The poison cake was administered to Bhima when he was a child, and the Pandavas and the Kurus were trained together under Dronacharya, but Duryodhan was always envious of the Pandavas. And therefore, he was always trying to put them down, and actually, more than just put them down, I mean literally put them down. He was trying to kill them, even when he was a little kid. He was so envious. And therefore, he arranged at one time for the birthday party of Bhima that a cake would be made. Bhima was a big eater, so he made a big cake, and they put poison in it. It was enough poison to kill a large animal. But Bhima took it and he fell asleep. And when he fell asleep, he fell into a lake. And when he went into the lake, he was apprehended by some of the serpents who were messengers from Vasuki, one of the denizens of the water world, And in any case, he was given some special nectar to drink. And it actually made him stronger. It counteracted the poison, and it made him as strong as 10,000 elephants. And then, after all the kids had gone home, they didn't know what happened to Bhima. And, of course, Duryodhan and his conspirators were thinking that he had been killed. And so they were crying crocodile tears, meaning they were pretending like they were sad that he was gone, but actually they were thinking, ha, 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 we finally got rid of this person. We got rid of Bhima. But about 5 days later, when he had come back from his adventure underwater and receiving special mercy and nectar and becoming stronger than he was before, he came bounding back into the assembly. And, of course, all of his brothers were so glad to see him. And Duryodhan's heart sank because he saw that he had come back and that he realized that he had achieved some kind of benediction. Mahagni, the great fire, was also the king who was Dronacharya's father, Dhritarashtra, upon whom, of course, the whole Bhagavad Duryodhan's father, Dhritarashtra, upon whom the whole Bhagavad Gita is based, in which, you know, he asks, how are my sons and the sons of Pandu doing? He has an interest in his sons winning and the Pandavas being defeated, because although Pandu had taken the throne because he was blind after Pandu died, and the throne was going to go to the Pandavas, he thought, well, I should have it. And Duryodhan should have it, his son. And he pushed for that, and he lost his intelligence. So in any case, he conspired with his son to make a house of shellac and invite the Pandavas to go there for a vacation and stay in this nice vacation home. They had a plan, however, that there was one undercover spy who would go with them, and at the right time, he would set the house on fire when they were sleeping, burn them to ashes, and then they would be rid of the Pandavas. However, Vidura, who was a well-wisher of the Pandavas, communicated to them in secret language, and I think he spoke in Lechabash, that he told them about this plan, that they were going to be burned to ashes. And they got the message. So when they got to that house, Yudhisthira, who was always looking after his brothers, made a plan, and they dug a tunnel underneath the house so they could escape at any time. And they never let on to the fact that they knew that they were in a house that was going to be burned to the ground. And it just so happened that on the night they escaped from the house, there were some other people who had moved into the house. There were five of them and a mother. So it looked like the Pandavas had been killed. They escaped in a tunnel underneath the ground, and everyone except for Vidura and a few others thought that they had been killed, actually. In fact, you'll find in the Krishna book that although Krishna knew that they had, because he's omniscient, knew that they had also been saved, he came there along with Balaram for the memorial service.
So everyone who knew was pretending like they were dead. And then they went and hid in exile for some time. Purushada, man-eaters, they, when the Pandavas were in the forest and when they were incognito, hiding from Duryodhan and Dhritarashtra and the conspirators who were trying to kill them, at one point they stayed in the house of a Brahmin in a town that was being harassed by Rakshasa. This Rakshasa was very powerful, and he would come into the town and he would kill at random and eat human beings. And finally, the council of the town made an agreement with him that instead of him doing it at random, they would offer him on a regular basis, once a week, a human who would go forward and bring him a huge cart full of food. And also, the problem was he'd eat the cart of food and he'd also eat the person who delivered it. And so they had to draw a lottery to see who would go and deliver that. the Pandavas were in hiding and they were staying at the house of this Brahmin when they heard the mother of the house crying. And when Kunti found out why she was crying, and the reason was that they had been chosen in the lottery to send their husband to bring the cart of food. He would bring the cart of food and he would be killed and eaten. So she was crying. So Kunti suggested, I'll send my son. And he'll take care of it. And she said, I can't do that. You're guests in my house. That's impossible. But Kunti insisted, and finally Bhima went with this huge cart of food. Of course, Bhima is known as Rikadar, which means wolf belly. He ate so much that when the Pandavas used to travel and they would beg amounts of food for the whole family, the way they divided up was Bhima got half and everyone else got the other half amongst the rest of them. So he delivered this cart and he had to take it up this hill, and the Rakshasa would come out of his cave and, you know, come for the food. And normally that's what would happen, and the person would stand there, offer him the food, he would eat the food, kill the man, and then that was it. But this time, Bhima, when he's pushing the cart up there, he started getting hungry, and he started eating the food on the cart. And the Rakshasa came out, and he couldn't believe the audacity of this human being who was not, you know, eating his food. So he got into a huge rage, and he came at Bhima. Now, Bhima, it was so strong that he kept eating, but he fought off the Rakshasa with the other hand. And when he had finished eating, then he pummeled him. And he creamed him so bad that you couldn't even recognize him. But the next morning, everyone found that the Rakshasa was dead, and they couldn't believe it. So the Pandavas left town very quickly because they didn't want anybody to know who they were and where they were, and nobody but Bhima could have done that. Then Asatsabhaya means the assembly in which there are asat, which means unruly or uncouth or very rude people. And so because the Pandavas had entered into a gambling match and they had lost everything, they had also forfeited their wife, Draupadi. And therefore, Dushasana and Duryodhan and even Karna conspired at this point where they said, okay, Draupadi is now ours. We're going to disrobe her in this assembly. A completely uncouth thing to do. Therefore, it's called Asatsabhaya, an assembly of rude people. And very instructive in that pastime, of course, is when Draupadi was being manhandled and they were trying to disrobe her in the assembly in front of everybody. She held on with one hand and she was crying out to Krishna with the other. And still she was struggling. But then finally she realized there's no match. And she put both hands in the air and said, "Oh Govinda, please save me." And when she completely surrendered and was completely helpless in that position, then Krishna manifested an unlimited length of sari and protected her and was personally there, present in that sari. And they were not able to disrobe her. And they became tired, Prabhupada said, trying to pull the sari more and more and more, and became bewildered by that. So Krishna again protected in this Asatsabhaya. Vanavasa, Krishrataha, they had, of course, gone to the forest. They had been exiled, even though they were princes. They were meant to take the throne. But still, somehow there was a reversal. And they had been sent to the forest for 12 years. The agreement was they had to remain in exile. And then the last year, they had to remain incognito. If they were found out in the last year of their exile, then they'd have to do another 12 years in the forest. And so within the forest life is not for princes, but still they endured so many sufferings, and inexplicably, you know, they had to spend all this time in the forest. And then after that, after they even came back, again, Mrde Mrde Neka Maharatasrato, then described by Shukadeva Goswami in the Srimad Bhagavatam, how in that battle of Kurukshetra, There were many great warriors there that were just like Timangila fish, these gigantic fish that can swallow whales just like they're minnows. They were so powerful, these great generals and fighters. But somehow or other, the Pandavas were empowered by Krishna. Arjuna was empowered. That all so many twists and turns in the battle that they were able to defeat all these huge personalities in this battlefield. And it was by the grace of Krishna. So, mridey mridey neka maharatashrito, even these great maharatas, they were able to defeat in the battle. And everyone was killed at the battlefield of Kurukshetra, but the Pandavas were saved because that's what Krishna wanted, and Krishna saved them. And again, after the battle, of course, we already read earlier in the Srimad Bhagavatam about how the astra was sent by Ashvatthama. He had killed the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas, and he brought the heads to Duryodhan. This was after Duryodhan's hip had been broken and he was lying practically incapacitated, and he brought the five heads and he said, look, I've got the heads of the Pandavas. But Duryodhan tested those heads and he saw those are not heads of the Pandavas, those are somebody else. And then Ashvatthama admitted, no, those are the children of the Pandavas. And then he was cursed even by Duryodhan, who was angry that he had killed the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. And out of desperation, this Ashvatthama had sent a Brahmastra twice, actually. It had been counteracted by Arjuna's counter-Brahmastra, and then again he threw another to kill the last remaining descendant of the Pandavas, Maharishi Parikshit, who was in the womb of Uttara. And she had called out to Krishna to be saved. And, of course, Krishna had entered the womb of Uttara. And at that time, Parikshit Maharaj had seen Krishna within the womb. And Krishna had protected that embryo within the womb. And he had, of course, been born safely, even though the Brahmastra had been thrown. So this is sort of a mini history, all in one verse, of all these sufferings that the Pandavas had undergone. And later on, Narada Muni is asking Krishna, how is it that these pure devotees are undergoing so many sufferings and things? And we talked about this last time, of how the devotees are tested. And devotees are put into so many difficulties sometimes. Actually, sometimes devotees who are not very advanced may look and see, well, look, the materialists, they're actually doing okay. Doesn't look like such a bad thing. They're doing fine. But in the pastimes of Lord Nrsimhadev, when Lord Nrsimhadev fought with Hiranyakashipu, there was a point at which, although Nrsimhadev had grabbed a hold of Hiranyakashipu, somehow or other he had escaped his grasp. And everyone who was watching, including the demigods, thought, oh, no. You know, because they weren't even sure this was Vishnu anyway. They'd never seen anything like this. Half man, half lion, and he was so angry. And you know, everyone came forward, offered Sanskrit prayers, and he was still roaring. They finally pushed Prahlad forward, offered prayers, everything. They weren't sure, you know, this was Vishnu. Even Lakshmi Devi didn't recognize. It was like, are you sure this is my husband? I don't know. I've never seen him this angry. And so, they were a little unsure. And when he lost the grip on Hiranyakashipu, who had been harassing everybody and had so much power, they thought, oh, this is it. You know, we're finished now. Now our last hope has come, and now Hiranyakashipu is free again. And, you know, we've all backed, you know, been cheering him on. And now, okay, we're really going to get it. But anyway, and as the fight went on, he again grabbed him, and he ripped him to shreds. And the acharyas have explained that actually, sometimes materialists, they think, oh, I'm okay. Actually, look, see? Look, I'm doing all right. Why believe in God? We're doing fine here in the material world, you know? What's your problem, you guys? You know, this is some sentiment that you're... But actually... this is only a little second in which one gets away from the grip and then comes back. And it's only the Lord's play, actually. He allows the materialist some little leeway. And Prabhupada explains, just like sometimes a cat, when he plays with a mouse, the mouse is going to die. There's no way he's getting away from the cat once the cat caught up to him. And sometimes he lets him free a little bit, and then he'll catch him again. So in the same way, the material energy is only playing with the materialist. But for the devotee, the cat is the mother cat and grabs the little kitten by the scruff of the neck. And if you see, the little kitten just purrs and is carried away to safety. So for the devotees, that the teeth of the cat are not dangerous. They're actually nurturing, welcoming. But for the materialist, the teeth of the cat are very dangerous. So the devotees, although it appears sometimes that they're in danger, it appears sometimes that they're being harassed just like an ordinary person, so many reversals of fortune, the devotees have no other shelter in this world except for Krishna. And actually, they feel some nectar, they feel some happiness by being protected by Krishna, and they always take shelter of Krishna and nobody else, nobody else. Samashrita ye parapalava plavam mahatpanam punya yasho murare bhavam budhir vatsa param param padam 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 yadvipadam natesham. So this Krishna, he's the ultimate shelter for everybody. There's no one else that we have to go to take shelter of. Sometimes people worship so many different demigods. But we read in the Brahma Samhita, yat pada palava yugam vinidaya kumba dvande pranama samyesa ganadi raja vignan vinhantum alamastya jagatrayasya govindamadi purusham tam aham bhajami. We worship Ganesh, but then where's Ganesh getting his power to remove our obstacles? Because he's keeping the lotus feet of Krishna on his head. That's where he gets his power from. So we should take shelter of Krishna. Samashrita ye parapalava plavam. His lotus feet are the shelter of the entire universe. There's no other shelter here in this world. And he can kill all these great demons. He can handle anything. So if we just take shelter of Krishna, then we'll be satisfied. So in Prabhupada's life, we see a perfect example. He's our acharya. And we can see how, he was in householder life. He had a business. And that business went belly up. Sometimes we see devotees, they may have a business and it's going along really well, and then all of a sudden they have a string of bad luck and everything goes wrong. They can't seem to win and things start to go awry and they lose everything, maybe even. But this happened to Prabhupada. In his life, he was supposed to be a very successful businessman. According to astrologers and according to material calculation, he was set up to have a huge business. One of those things like, all the numbers are lined up, all the stars are lined up, you should definitely be as rich as Birla very soon. But then one thing after another, beyond his control, began to happen, and everything slipped away. So he lost everything. And where did Prabhupada end up? He ended up in Vrindavan. And of course, when Prabhupada went to Vrindavan, it wasn't even like when ordinary sadhus go to Vrindavan. Not that any sadhu who goes to Vrindavan is ordinary. They're extraordinary, and we worship their lotus feet. But especially Prabhupada had a mission in mind when he went to Vrindavan. He was not in Vrindavan just to sit and chant for himself, but he was also planning how to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And this is also a nice example. Because although we have our material life, right? We go to school, we try to plan something, how to be successful, how to have our comforts of life and things like that in this world. Still, those things we can absolutely guarantee that it's going to fall through. I'm just saying it right now. I'm not saying it. Actually, Krishna says it in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, everything you're planning here, everything you've set up for, everything you've worked hard for, it's going to fall through. Guaranteed. Just take it. Take that. But that's not it. That's not the final word. The final word is, at the same time, we have to grab onto something permanent. No doubt, we can't stop doing our work. We're getting PhDs. We're working in offices, we're maintaining families, we have, you know, wives, we have children, all these things. These things, of course, we'll dutifully protect at every second and do what we have to do. However, we should know that it'll all fall through. It will. Krishna certifies, Dukalayam Ashashvatam. You've entered into a place where everything's temporary. You know, in a dream, sometimes you'll go to embrace somebody, some beautiful person, and then all of a sudden they turn ugly or something. It turns into a monster, right? Well, that happens in waking life too. It just happens a little slower, that's all. But we think that in a dream it just happens like that, and we think that, it's a dream. But actually material life is a dream also. And all the things that we're embracing, that we think, oh, this is mine, this is my car, this is my house, this is my wife, this is my money, this is my bank balance, everything like that, it'll also morph. It'll turn into something else, so we'll lose it. Dukalayam Ashashvatam. This is the source for our misery. This place is Dukalayam and Ashashvatam. It's non-permanent, and it's also a miserable place, Krishna says. So we shouldn't take shelter here. We should take shelter in a place that's permanent. And my point is this. We have our life from momentum from our previous life. It's being carried on. But what we should also do is set ourselves up for our spiritual life simultaneously to while we're doing our duties. Whatever duties we're doing in material life, we should also be setting up our parallel life in spiritual life. That means getting some service, getting some standing in spiritual life, putting ourselves in the association of people who are significant who have some spiritual standing. You know, get some position there, because you won't lose that. That part is eternal. And Lord Jesus Christ said, don't build your houses and your dwellings here in this world. Build them in the spiritual world. Make your investment there. Don't invest here. It's a bad investment. You're going to lose it. But invest in the spiritual world. We've already invested here. So, you know, just consider that it's a write-off. You're going to lose it all. But now, as much as you can scrape together, invest it in your service. Invest it in spiritual life. And so that's Prabhupada. It's a perfect example. We can just follow his example, what he did. He showed us by example. He was a householder. He had a business. He had a family. It all fell through. The whole thing fell through. And what did he do? What did he take shelter of? Where did he go? He took shelter of his service. He had a service given to him by his guru, which was, you know, print books and distribute them. Make sure you preach Krishna consciousness. Go out and preach. That's a huge instruction. You can go to the end of your life with that. You could take that one to the bank. And if you get something like that, if you get some little service, that's your in. Now you've got a chip in the big game of devotional service. If someone gives you, someone hands you a little service in the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, take it. Take it and run with it. Do everything you can to invest in it and make that your parallel life, some place where you have for shelter when everything else falls through. And it will fall through. It's guaranteed it'll fall through. So build that other house in Goloka by doing your service. Now here's Prabhupada. When he gets to Vrindavan, imagine he's lost everything. He's left his family, actually, because the whole thing became very dicey. And, his family now was not even in tune with his spiritual practice anymore, apparently. Now, there was some story about how he had a manuscript that he was working on. Can you imagine? You're working, not even a word processor, like you backed it up somewhere. But he actually had a manuscript that he had worked on for Bhagavad Gita, and make sure Mataji gets prasadam as she's leaving. And that somehow somebody in the household had mysteriously disappeared, and it turned out apparently someone had traded it in for some tea biscuits or something. That's how the story goes. I mean, that was the atmosphere of his home life. His business fell through. He took vanaprastha life, and he went off to find some service in the mission of his Guru Maharaj. And actually, at first, he went, and because he was a very expert writer and editor, one of his godbrothers offered him some service editing this newsletter, this magazine they had called Sajjana Toshini. And Prabhupada, when he took it over, he had these huge plans for it. He started thinking, let's get it going in 50 languages. Let's get thousands of these out there. And at the time, they were just doing some small-time operation, you know, a couple hundred copies or something. And they were a little intimidated by Prabhupada's vision. They're, no, you don't understand. This is just a little magazine. No, there's Prabhupada. No, 50 languages. It'll be huge. It'll be like Time magazine all over the world. And so they were, finally they wrote Prabhupada a letter and said, maybe you should find another service or something. So he moved on. He started the League of Devotees, which also was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it didn't really pan out. And then, of course, Prabhupada was planning. So then he started his own magazine because he had this idea from Sajjana Toshini to do this magazine. And what was it called? Back to Godhead magazine. Prabhupada wrote all the articles. Prabhupada got all the paper. Prabhupada got all the ink. Prabhupada lined up all the printing. He did everything. And there was no paper at that time. It was very difficult. It was during the war. Everything was rationed. And Prabhupada didn't have any money. In fact, it's mentioned by the printer who used to print his BTG for him. He said that this sadhu used to show up, and he had no money, and he used to ask him, did you have breakfast when he'd show up? He said, no, I didn't have breakfast. Because Prabhupada was saving money for the publication, so he wouldn't eat. He wouldn't eat because he wanted to get the thing published. He'd walk everywhere except on the times when he had to transport these huge reams of paper from one place to another. Then he'd hire a rickshaw and he'd haggle over the price. This is how careful Prabhupada was about money. And he used every cent. In fact, when he decided to buy some new cloth, it was a big decision, and it was based on the fact that he wanted to look better so that when he went preaching in Delhi and Bombay and other places, people would respect him and not just think that he was some insignificant person. Prabhupada went to Vrindavan. Sometimes we say, oh, Prabhupada went and sat down in Vrindavan for 10, 11 years. Actually, he didn't. He came and went from Vrindavan all the time. If you look at the record, Prabhupada came and went from Vrindavan. He went to Delhi. He went to Bombay. He went to all kinds of places. And he even wanted to go to Japan. He was ready to go to Japan as soon as he got an invitation from the Japanese. They sent him this invitation for this special seminar, which was about the cultivation of the human spirit. Can you hand me that light of the Bhagavat, please? Prabhupada dropped everything that he was doing. And what was he doing? Let me first say, when he was in Vrindavan, he was writing books. He was writing his magazine, Back to Godhead magazine. And then he was distributing himself, everything he was completing by himself. Then he got a couple suggestions. A couple people told him, why don't you make books? Because they're more permanent than magazines. So Prabhupada started, he wrote Easy Journey to Other Planets. And then soon after that, he started his commentary on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And people who saw Prabhupada at that time, who knew Prabhupada in Vrindavan at that time, they said, what was he doing? They said, typing. He was in there typing on an old typewriter, the Srimad Bhagavatam, what we have now. But his plan was to carry out the order of his Guru Maharaj. He wrote this book. He dropped everything for a while and wrote this book, Light of the Bhagavat, which was in manuscript form until after Prabhupada left the planet. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj and some others put it together in the form of this book. He was going to take this to Japan and present it at the seminar called The Cultivation of the Human Spirit. But he couldn't get the money to go. Nobody. He wrote to everybody, and nobody would give him enough money to go and get the ticket to go to present this in Japan. So anyway, I want to read this short poem that Prabhupada wrote while he was sitting in Vrindavan. Now, the scene is that he lost his business. He left his home. There he is in Vrindavan, and he's simply meditating on this service he has to his Guru Maharaj. It's called Vrindavane Bhajana, worshipping the Lord in Vrindavan. I'm sitting alone in the transcendental abode of Sri Vrindavan Dham. While in this mood of contemplation, many realizations have been coming to me. I have my wife along with sons, daughters, grandsons, everything. But because I have no money, I am considered a worthless asset. Sri Krishna has shown me the naked form of material nature. By the strength of his mercy upon me today, I have become disgusted with it all. Krishna says, I gradually take away all the wealth of those to whom I show my favor. How was I able to understand this mercy of the all-merciful Lord? Seeing that I am penniless, everyone has now abandoned me, including my own family, my brothers, relatives, and even my friends. This situation is indeed miserable, but it simply amuses me. I sit alone and laugh. In this mundane world, whom do I really love? Where have my affectionate father and mother gone now? And where are all my elders and other relatives who were my own folk? Who will give me news of them now? I ask you, tell me who. All that is left of this so-called family is a list of their names. As the froth upon the seawater arises for a moment and then subsides, the play of Maya's worldly illusion is exactly like that. No one is factually a mother or father, a family member or relative. Everyone is just like the foam on the seawater, remaining in view for only a few moments. Just as the froth on the seawater dissolves again into the sea, the body made of five material elements merges again with these elements after it dies. How many material forms does the embodied soul take in this way? His so-called family members are only related to the temporary external body. But all of us are actually relatives. O brothers, on the platform of the pure spirit soul, these eternal relationships are not tinged with the temporary delusions of Maya. The Supreme Lord is himself the ultimate soul of everyone. In their eternal relation to him, everyone in the universe is equal. O brothers, all the millions of spirit souls are your personal relatives. In their true relationship with Krishna, everyone coexists in complete harmony. Forgetting Krishna, the living entity desires personal sense gratification. Because of this rebellious desire, the spirit soul falls into the clutches of Maya. As a result of their accumulated fruit of reactions, all these souls accept various bodily forms. Then, becoming engrossed in these material disguises, they forget all about their Lord, Sri Hari. Therefore, Maya torments the embodied souls with a great variety of material miseries. But as they rise and sink in these waves of suffering, they mistake their experiences for actual happiness. A chronically ill patient lies upon his bed, suffering intense pain, but he smiles and laughs as he states, "Today I'm doing fine." All this talk about doing fine really makes me laugh out loud. This is the fine of the spirit soul who is truly bound up by Maya's illusion. They make a great many plans to live here comfortably, doing fine, but material nature smashes all of their arrangements one after another. The Lord's Maya is divine energy consisting of the three modes of material nature. O brothers, please try to understand the reality of this delusion in supposedly doing fine. Although nobody is actually fine here in this world, they still say the words, "I am fine." In this way, Maya completely cheats the bound-up conditioned soul. But ignoring the fact that they are being cheated, these souls remain perpetually engrossed in illusion. Although Maya kicks them severely during their attempts to enjoy, they still refuse to give up their forgetfulness. Again and again they make their plans, which again and again are thwarted. Sometimes they fall on the dry earth, and sometimes they fall in the wet mud. In this way, all the fallen souls wander throughout the egg-like material universe, until eventually, by the causeless mercy of Guru and Krishna, they are offered the eternal treasure of devotional service. If they reject all other forms of mundane wealth upon receiving that divine treasure of bhakti, then they can very easily travel outside the temporary material sphere. Beyond the limited world of dull matter exist spiritual wonders of limitless varieties. Feeling eternal peace and eternal happiness living there, all the spirit souls joyfully frolic about. Only a madman ignorantly declares everything in the spiritual world is formless. He claims that God has no personal qualities and that ultimately there is just void. But God is the storehouse of transcendental mellows. Verily, he is rasa himself. the ecstatic devotees who lovingly relish his mellows render service and submission to him. They serve him in the mellows of neutrality, servitude, friendship, parental affection, and in the rasa that is the greatest of them all, the quintessential conjugal mellow. When they are expressed in the spiritual world, all of these mellows are very relishable. But in the material world, being mere reflections, they are repulsive distortions of the original. Whoever worships Krishna in devotion becomes truly wise. Whoever worships Maya in illusion becomes truly destitute. Thus, becoming destitute, the fallen soul attempts to enjoy his fleeting fantasies. Bereft of the knowledge of his eternal relationship with Krishna, he is ensnared in the noose of his own fruitive reactions. Arjuna fought in the ancient battle of Kurukshetra, and Duryodhana also fought in the same battle. Arjuna was the best of devotees, whereas Duryodhana simply perished. The battlefield was the same, but the two persons were very different. One was a friend of Krishna, and the other was a foe. Persons who are actually intelligent can understand the significance of this situation. Whoever is in knowledge of the soul, spirit soul's eternal relationship with Lord Krishna and fights the battle of life for his sake will remain alive in devotional service, while others will simply perish. Whoever is not in knowledge of the spirit soul's eternal relationship with Lord Krishna and runs foolishly down some other path will never attain love for Krishna and simply waste their entire life. First, properly understand your eternal relationship with Krishna along with its subsequent transcendental truths. Then, remaining firmly fixed in your alliance with him, go and confidently fight the battle against Maya. Those who previously deserted the battle in order to become heroes in the realm of intellectual knowledge and fruit of action had never attained liberation from the material sphere, but simply remained disturbed throughout their lives. In name only, these appeared to be eminent and grave personalities, but in actuality, they were constantly agitated by Maya. Hankering after material enjoyment, liberation, and mystic perfection, all of them thus had uncontrolled senses. Uncontrolled senses can never be subdued even by the power of diligent yoga practice. How many great munis and yogis in the past have all been overwhelmed by sensual urges? Without serving Lord Hrishikesh, master of the senses, they can manage to subdue the senses for a time, but they eventually return to material activities, ultimately suffering the punishment of Yamaraj. The senses can never be permanently restrained by the practice of physical yoga exercises. This is clearly explained in many places throughout the Agama and Purana scriptures. Although the great sage named Vishvamrita was sitting and meditating in mystic trance, he still fell down from that practice to unite with Menaka, begetting a beautiful and pure daughter named Shakuntala. In this way, the unsuccessful yogis fall down. What to speak of the learned gyanis? And for the degraded karmis, grossly foolish like asses, they are perpetually afflicted with suffering. When Lord Krishna shows his mercy by personally giving instruction to someone, then that individual becomes equally fortunate as the great devotee Arjuna. But whoever fights the battle of life for the sake of his own selfish pleasure, then that individual perishes along with his family, just like the foolish demon Duryodhana. Whoever daily fights the battle of life but only for Lord Krishna's sake, finds prosperity, mystic perfection, and transcendental knowledge appearing automatically within his grasp. O brothers, take care to properly understand the transcendental message of Bhagavad Gita. Then you will attain Lord Krishna's mercy, and you will be engaged in the worship of Sri Hari. The Lord's devotees are richly endowed with all transcendental qualities. They have nothing to do with worldly concepts like ahimsa, nonviolence, and akrodha, freedom from anger. Using his devotees as instruments, Sri Hari gives instructions to the fallen souls. One such assistant of his is known as Partha, the son of Pritha, Arjuna. Arjuna had taken himself to be just like an ordinary person bound by Maya. Thus, the brother of the Pandavas acted as though he was bewildered. Arjuna expressed his lamentation thus: violently killing my own relatives and family members and afterwards enjoying rulership of their kingdom, what kind of happiness would that bring me? Thus he displayed illusory bodily consciousness by considering the bodies of others to be his kinsmen, and the warrior considered leaving the battlefield out of affection for his family members. Seeing his cowardly bewilderment, Lord Krishna personally chastised him. Thereafter, Arjuna surrendered and agreed to become Krishna's disciple. Becoming Krishna's disciple, Arjuna thus listened to the Lord's recitation of the Bhagavad Gita, the hearing of which surely dispels ignorance as well as material bondage. Although Arjuna's material bondage was dispelled, he never renounced the world externally like a sannyasi does. Following his example, those who are householders can understand the true message of Bhagavad Gita. I am now firm and free from doubt, and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. Arjuna spoke this most perfect of mantras, and thus he achieved glory in fighting in that battle. Someone may claim, all the devotees of the Lord are typically nonviolent. Throughout the world they can be seen peacefully chanting japa on their beads. How then can this warrior, Arjuna, be considered a devotee? Someone may claim a Vaishnava is completely peaceful and simply spends his time chanting japa on his beads. But whoever speaks like this only eats the mind's bananas. In other words, he makes a big mistake. A devotee of the Lord is naturally gentle in disposition and thus bears no malice towards other living beings. But that does not mean he is a weakling and possesses no valor, as the common people foolishly think. In the two great battles of ancient India, there have been two great heroes. Both of them were exalted devotees of the Lord, and thus they were victorious. It is said that a Vaishnava never fights a battle out of desire for personal sense gratification. This fact is indeed known throughout the entire world. Those who have never seen a true Vaishnava mistakenly claim that a Vaishnava is inactive. Actually, a Vaishnava is always active, but only in the service of the Supreme Lord. However, the neophyte devotee, being bereft of life, does not engage in such active service to the Lord. In hope of earning the reputation of a so-called sage, he pretentiously lives in a solitary place. Srila Nityananda Roy, who is worshipable by all the devotees, was even physically attacked by the demons, but every time he bestowed love of God. Lord Gaurahari even raised his Sudarshan disc there to punish the envious offenders of the devotees, but they were then delivered by the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Showing the ideal example himself, Lord Chaitanya engaged in preaching to the fallen souls. Those who attempt worshipping him in a solitary place verily cheat themselves. The whole world has now filled up with countless Jugeyes and Mudeyes needing deliverance. But those in the lineage stemming from Lord Nityananda are simply busy increasing the numbers of their own disciples. They eat and sleep nicely, live in luxury, and thus remain free from personal inconvenience. But for a Vaishnava, it is inappropriate to live without activity showing mercy to others. In his book named Madhurya Kadambini, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has revealed the truth in this regard. Just see his learned judgment. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the main feature of bhakti is that it is causeless, manifesting of its own accord. It is an eternally perfect substance. However, it lies dormant until it is awakened. The middle-class devotee extends his mercy toward others. Being compassionate to the non-devotees, he endeavors to awaken their dormant bhakti. The Supreme Lord himself comes under the control of such a true devotee. Being enchanted with the devotee's merciful nature, the Lord always follows his lead. The devotee is able to reawaken the sleeping material universe. Indeed, by his causeless mercy, sinful souls are transformed into devotees. Therefore, the true devotee never abandons preaching work to go off and engage in solitary worship. Such behavior of the neophyte devotee thus cheats the entire world. Once I had observed an assembly of supposedly famous Vaishnavas who were honored with big devotional titles. A Christian missionary came to Vrindavan and met them at their residence. The priest asked those devotees some questions about the Vrindavan pastimes of Sri Krishna, but among that entire assembly of so-called devotees, no one could enlighten him about such transcendental truths. None of those neophyte devotees could understand the scriptures at all. Engaging in their pretentious solitary worship, they simply search for dry japatis and chickpeas. My Gurudev had once boldly declared, all these Babajis in Vraj are neophytes. After so long, I have finally understood the resounding truth of what he said. One who is expert in the conclusions of the revealed scriptures and who has firm faith in Lord Krishna is classified as a topmost devotee. He can deliver the whole world. My spiritual master is known throughout the universe as the savior of the fallen. If he can deliver someone as fallen as myself, then he is surely as glorious as his reputation. In this age of Kali Yuga, all the souls are fallen and wretched. Although looking with their eyes, they still cannot see the actual situation here in this world. Sri Gaurasundar, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the most magnanimous personality. His nectarian instructions to us are sweet and profound to hear. His instruction was that whoever has taken birth in the holy land of India should work for the real benefit of others. One of the Lord's own pastimes was to remain in solitude, tasting and relishing transcendental topics about Radha Krishna. But it is never the devotee's practice to imitate this confidential pastime of his. When the devotees engage in the activities of devotional service, they never attempt to personally relish like the Lord did. Tasting and relishing transcendental pastimes is actually impossible for those living in the dull material body. One who is deluded with gross bodily consciousness identifies with his material body. While trapped in this temporary covering, no one has ever relished transcendental enjoyment like the Lord's. There are some who bodily judge the Lord's devotees in terms of caste or external bodily nature, but these same critics consider themselves quite expert in relishing Radha Krishna's transcendental pastimes. For example, there was a clerk at the post office who is a respected caste Goswami. The local Babajis would always go there and bow to him again and again. But even that supposedly exalted soul was falsely proud of his own caste by birth. Sri Nityananda Prabhu, the best of lords, smashed such conceptions to pieces. I have personally seen all these things going on in the holy land of Vrindavan Dham. Therefore, I can understand that there is some work to be done here. There are many pretentious Prakriti Sahajas busily engaged in outright debauchery. They seduce the wives of others and try to relish a mundane imitation of Radha Krishna's transcendental leela. These are not the ecstatic devotional moods of the transcendental abode of Vrindavan Dham. O my dear mind, please continually remember the lotus feet of the six Goswamis. Since the time the six Goswamis first arrived in Vrindavan on the command of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and preached true religious principles, the practice of devotional service has indeed flourished. All the Goswamis are eternally liberated associates of the Lord, and they continually remember the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Their confidential practice of such remembrance, Lila Smarana, vanquishes all the sins of the fallen souls. If someone simply tries to imitate those great souls by artificially adopting their dress and behavior, then he is immediately captured by Maya and is never allowed to escape from the material world. Just preach the Lord's message to the fallen souls, going continuously from door to door. By the grace of that preaching, your life will become truly successful. I'll just repeat that. Just preach the Lord's message to the fallen souls, going continuously from door to door or Walmart to Walmart. By the grace of that preaching, your life will become truly successful. My spiritual master, Sri Barshabhanavi Daita Das, has given the following instruction. Chant the holy name in a loud voice. This is his foremost commandment. The purpose of performing congregational chanting is not simply to make a loud noise by beating on drums. The modern style racket created by the devotees nowadays is not the sweet sound of pure kirtan. Anything truly useful for the service of Hari is non-different from Lord Madhava, for in actuality the sole enjoyer of everything within the three worlds is Lord Yadava. Maya's deluding potency is perfectly expressed in the sound of the radios that are loudly heard everywhere. By performing enthusiastic kirtan continuously, just drown out all that nonsense noise. All these mundane newspapers simply represent the trivial, chaotic hashing of Maya. Trivial, chaotic hashing. To counteract such useless distractions, just perform kirtan everywhere in the world. By sitting in a solitary room pretentiously calling out to the Lord, you may increase your bile secretion. But by spending even 10 million births in that way, you will never please Sri Hari. Sri Hari is not some material asset to be inherited from anyone's father. Just come out of your private little pen and do not make any objection. Everyone belongs to Sri Hari, and Sri Hari belongs to everyone. Go on chanting kirtan with loudly raised voices. This is my spiritual master's instruction. By the natural potency of that kirtan, the methods of smarana or transcendental remembrance will spontaneously arise. Only then will the qualifications for solitary worship be genuinely attained within the heart. Om Tat Sat. So it's a little longer than I thought. But I thought it was appropriate for today's verse, and also since today we're going out door to door, Walmart to Walmart, Santa Cruz street corner to Santa Cruz street corner, to distribute these books. And it is in line with the mood and method of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of his great followers like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Siddhanta Saraswati, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, whose very books we have here that he wrote in Vrindavan and published there. So make no mistake, those of you who are engaged in this process are actually directly in line and are being blessed by these great acharyas. And there is no question about your ultimate success by engaging in this process in this authorized way. So go forth with great gusto. This weekend is we're worshiping Srimati Radharani. Srila Prabhupada has told us that Krishna, it's very difficult to approach Krishna, but if we approach Radharani, she's easy to please. And when she presents what we offer to her, to Krishna, then he accepts it, because he takes whatever Radharani offers. So we can think of it in that mood. Vanki Prabhu has told us before that one of the best things to do is to meditate on these holy days, on the personality who we're trying to please when we go out. So we can all do that today. It's think of Srimati Radharani, who's here benedicting all of Silicon Valley, and we're getting the brunt of her mercy by coming here regularly and performing service here. And try to give out this mercy. We have tons of books. We can't keep up with the amount of books that we're stockpiling. So give out as many books as possible. Give as many pieces of prasadam. The Mother Sachimata, on a moment's notice, dropped everything and baked all these cookies for us yesterday to distribute. And the devotees have already packed them. And so we're all ready to go for the monthly Sankirtan festival. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gopri Manande Hari Hari Bol.